Ever heard that phrase, a lull in the cycle of violence? Kind of gives you a peaceful vibe, right?
Yeah, a little ironic, isn't it?
Totally. But what if that lull was like the only chance for survival? That's exactly what we're going to dive into today with this case, State v. Norman.
Oh, this one's a doozy. Really messed with how courts see self-defense, especially when it comes to domestic abuse.
You said it. So we've got Judy Norman at the center of it all.
Right.
She lived through 25 years of absolute hell with her husband, John. We're talking beatings, forced prostitution, even being made to eat pet food. It's just mind-blowing.
It's horrific. And this is where that term battered woman syndrome comes in, BWS.
BWS.
It's not some magic legal defense, but it helps explain what that kind of abuse does to someone's mind.
So, like how they see danger, their ability to escape, all that.
Exactly. Victims of BWS, they can feel utterly trapped, like there's no way out, even if logically there might be.
God, so disturbing. Judy even tried to take her own life at one point, and her husband messed with her medical treatment after that.
Wow.
Talk about feeling stuck. It all built up to this really awful moment. Judy shot her husband while he was asleep.
And that's where things get really legally murky.
Right. Can you kill someone in their sleep and call it self-defense?
Exactly. And the first court, they didn't buy it, convicted Judy of voluntary manslaughter, gave her 6 years.
6 years.
But her lawyers, they weren't done yet. They appealed.
So what was their angle? What they used to try to get that conviction overturned?
They went after how the jury was told to think about self-defense. Basically, they said the jury should have been able to consider BWS, how it twisted Judy's view of the situation.
Like, could she really believe she was in danger even though her husband was out cold?
Exactly. It wasn't about whether she pulled the trigger, she admitted to that. It was about the WHY and if the law could see it as self-defense.
Makes sense. So, big question is, what did the Court of Appeals say?
They overturned the conviction, ordered a new trial. And here's where it gets fascinating. They basically redefined what imminent threat means.
Wait, hold on. Are they saying even though he was sleeping, he was still a threat to Judy?
Exactly. They recognize that for someone stuck in that cycle of abuse, the danger doesn't just vanish because the abuser is quiet for a moment. It's
Right.
like having this sword hanging over your head and you never know when it's going to fall. Abuse creates that constant dread, that feeling like the violence is going to explode again.
It makes you realize how desperate Judy must have felt, like that was her only option. Did they use a lot of expert testimony on BWS to explain all this?
Oh, absolutely. A psychologist, Dr. Tyson, he specialized in BWS. His testimony was crucial.
Yeah.
He really laid it all out for the court, how years of this abuse warped Judy's sense of danger. It was huge for how the legal system looks at these cases.
So this is a pretty major shift in how we think about this stuff. How the appeals court connect this new imminent threat idea to what the law usually looks for in self-defense.
Okay, so they broke it down into four main points. First, you've got the subjective belief. Did Judy, in that moment, actually believe she needed to use deadly force?
Okay, yeah.
Second, was that belief objectively reasonable? If you put a reasonable person in her shoes, someone who'd gone through all that, would they also think their life was at stake?
Makes sense. So it's not just what she felt, but if a regular person, knowing what she went through, would feel the same fear. Okay, what else?
Third point is about being the non-aggressor.
Right.
Was Judy the one who started the fight, so to speak? Here, clearly not. And lastly, you have proportional force. That's always tricky with self-defense.
Yeah, shooting someone while they're asleep. Was that over the top? The court really had to weigh that whole history of abuse against that one act.
Exactly. And they decided the endless abuse, plus Judy's genuine belief she was in mortal danger, justified what she did.
So basically, because of that past, the court said her fear, even though he was sleeping, was reasonable enough to justify her actions. That's a big deal. This must have changed how the legal world saw domestic violence cases, huh?
Huge impact. State v. Norman really blew things open for understanding self-defense in abuse situations, but it wasn't a total slam dunk. Some judges, they didn't agree with the majority, and that's where things get even more interesting.
Back again for more on State v. Norman. Still can't get over all of the twists and turns in this case.
Right. It really exposes the cracks in the legal system, especially when you dig into domestic abuse. Last time, we were about to hear from those judges who didn't quite agree with expanding the definition of imminent threat.
Yeah, those dissenting opinions. They had some concerns, right?
They did. They worried about setting a precedent where anyone could just, you know, kill an abuser because they were scared of what might happen someday.
Makes sense. It's a slippery slope. You got to balance protecting victims with that whole idea that deadly force should be a last resort.
Absolutely. So how did Norman actually change legal thinking? Did it really shift the landscape?
Oh, it made waves, for sure. Especially in two big areas. First, Norman really opened the door for expert testimony about BWS, like using it in courtrooms all over the country.
Think about it. Before Norman, that wasn't really a thing. But now, when someone like Judy Norman claims self-defense, her lawyer can bring in an expert.
To explain the psychology of abuse.
Exactly. Explain what happens to someone's mind after years of that kind of trauma. Why they might feel trapped, unable to escape, even if it seems like there were options.
Giving a voice to those who often don't have one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The law usually focuses on hard evidence, immediate threats. This brings in the human side, the emotional reality of being in that situation.
The second big change Norman sparked has to do with how juries are instructed, right?
You got it. Before this case, juries in abuse cases were often told to just focus on the immediate situation. Was the abuser attacking right then and there?
Norman broadened that view, didn't it?
It did. Now juries can consider the entire history of abuse.
Not just that one moment in time.
Precisely. They're told to think about the long-term effects, the psychological impact, and whether, looking at everything that happened, the victim reasonably believed they were in danger of being killed, even if the abuser wasn't actively attacking at the time.
Seems way more realistic. It's about the pattern of violence, the control, not just that one incident.
And it shows how the legal system is starting to grasp how complicated domestic violence really is. But even with all that, the debate about what Norman really means, it still rages on.
Yeah, you've got that need to protect victims, but you also have that core legal principle. Deadly force should only be used as a last resort.
Lots of gray area there. And every case is different with its own unique set of facts. Norman didn't say that killing an abuser in their sleep is always justified.
Right.
It just provided a framework for understanding how years of abuse can warp someone's perception of danger and their ability to act in self-defense.
So it comes down to the specifics, the evidence, what the jury decides.
Exactly. And that's why having skilled lawyers and expert witnesses is so crucial. They have to tell a story that goes beyond legal definitions, a story that gets to the heart of what it means to survive when you're living in constant fear.
Almost like they're painting a picture for the jury, helping them see inside that world why the victim did what they did. But this isn't just a legal issue, is it?
Not at all. It reflects how society as a whole understands and responds to domestic violence. Norman came at a time when awareness was growing, but the legal system was lagging behind.
People still asked those victim-blaming questions. Why didn't she leave? Why didn't she call the police?
Exactly. But as we've been talking about, it's so much more complicated than that. Victims might be terrified of what will happen if they try to leave. They might not have support, or they might be so traumatized and controlled that they can't think straight.
And Norman brought all that to light, right?
It did. It forced the legal system to consider the psychological scars of abuse, the very real dangers victims face.
How does this case tie into all the conversations we're having now about domestic violence, consent, and power dynamics in relationships?
It's all connected. We're seeing a much greater emphasis on understanding and tackling something called coercive control. It's not just about physical abuse.
It's about more than that.
Yeah. It's about emotional manipulation, financial abuse, isolation, all these tactics abusers use to keep their victims trapped.
So it's that whole web of control, not just isolated acts of violence.
Precisely. And in many ways, Norman laid the groundwork for this deeper understanding of abuse. The case itself focused on physical violence, but the court's recognition of that constant threat and the psychological impact really opened the door for how we think about and address these situations today.
It's wild how a single case from so long ago can still be so relevant to what we're dealing with now. But there's one piece we haven't really touched on yet. What does Norman mean for lawyers and law students? What are the takeaways for them?
Right. We can't overlook the real-world impact.
So for those listening who are in the legal field, what are the big lessons from Norman? What should you keep in mind when you're handling cases that involve domestic violence and self-defense?
First and foremost, Norman shows just how important expert testimony can be. Lawyers who represent abuse survivors need to be ready to bring in experts who can explain how domestic violence works, how it affects the victim's mind, and why their actions might have been influenced by the abuse.
So it's about educating the jury, right?
Yeah.
Helping them understand why a victim might have felt like they had no other choice.
Exactly. And it's also about knowing when to argue for self-defense instructions. Norman showed that self-defense can be a valid defense even if the abuser wasn't attacking at the exact moment of the killing. But you have to carefully analyze the specifics of the case, the history of abuse, and the victim's state of mind to build a strong argument.
So lawyers need to know the law, but they also have to be sensitive to the realities of domestic violence and what their clients have been through.
Absolutely. And for law students, Norman is a must read. It shows you the gaps that can exist in the legal system and how appellate courts can step in to address those gaps. It reminds us that the law is always changing and we have to constantly be pushing for a more just and fair system that protects those who are most vulnerable.
Well said. It's clear that State v. Norman was a turning point in how the courts view self-defense in the context of domestic violence. It forced us to face some uncomfortable truths, rethink our definitions, and consider the long-lasting effects of abuse on a victim's perception of danger and their ability to act.
And as we've been discussing, the impact of this case continues to ripple outward, influencing legal strategies, informing social movements, and shaping our understanding of how power and control work in relationships.
It's been quite a journey dissecting this landmark case, but we're not quite finished. Join us for the final part of our deep dive, where we'll explore the lasting legacy of State v. Norman and the challenges we still face in addressing domestic violence within the legal system. Welcome back. It's the final part of our deep dive into State v. Norman. We've really gone through it all, the facts of the case, all the legal back and forth. It's tough stuff, but so important to understand.
It really is. We've walked through the legal maze, explored the deep psychological wounds abuse inflicts, and even touched on how Norman fits into the bigger picture of social justice. As we wrap things up, I think it's crucial to look ahead.
For sure. What's the lasting impact of State v. Norman? How has it shaped the legal world and how we view domestic violence all these years later?
One of the most significant things Norman did was bring more awareness to battered woman syndrome and more acceptance of it, not just in the courts, but in society as a whole.
So we're finally moving past those judgmental questions, like why didn't she just leave? We're recognizing those very real and scary obstacles that keep victims trapped.
Exactly. Norman helped validate the experiences of survivors. It acknowledged the terror they face, even when the abuser isn't actively being violent.
The court finally understood, it seems like. The threat doesn't just disappear because the abuser is asleep or calm for a bit. That cycle of violence creates a constant state of fear. How has that shift impacted things practically?
It's led to more nuanced approaches in how these cases are handled, both by prosecutors and defense attorneys. Prosecutors are more likely to consider the history of abuse when deciding what charges to bring. And defense attorneys, they have a stronger foundation now to argue self-defense.
Even in situations where the victim killed the abuser during a lull in the violence.
Right.
So Norman didn't just change the law, it changed the whole conversation around domestic violence.
It did. And that conversation is still going on. There are efforts to improve how law enforcement responds to domestic violence calls, provide better support for victims, and really tackle those root causes of abuse.
I imagine it's not always easy, though, right?
Unfortunately, no.
Domestic violence is still a huge problem, and going through the legal system can be incredibly difficult for victims, even with all this increased awareness.
You're right. We have a long way to go. Many victims are still afraid to report abuse, worried about what the abuser might do, or they don't trust the system. Sometimes there's pressure from family or their community to stay silent. And even when cases do go to court, getting a conviction can be really tough.
Especially if the abuse is more psychological or emotional.
Right. It can be much harder to prove than physical violence.
And there's still that debate about how battered woman syndrome should be used in court.
Yeah, there are valid concerns. Some argue it can be misused or that it reinforces those negative stereotypes. You know, the ones about women being helpless.
So it's a tool that needs to be used very carefully, ethically.
Absolutely. But even with all these challenges, we can't forget the progress that's been made. State v. Norman was a landmark case. It started important conversations, forced people to question their assumptions, and ultimately it helped create a fairer legal system for those who have suffered from domestic violence.
And that's what makes this case so powerful. It's not just a legal precedent. It's a symbol of hope.
It is.
It's a call for all of us to keep fighting for a world free from violence and abuse.
That's a great way to put it. And on that note, I think it's time to wrap up our deep dive into State v. Norman. But before we go, I want to leave our listeners with something to think about.
Okay, what's that lingering question we should all be asking ourselves?
How can we, as individuals and as a society, make cases like State v. Norman a thing of the past? How can we break that cycle of violence, support survivors, and make sure everyone has the right to live a life free from fear and abuse? That's the challenge we all face.
It's a challenge that demands empathy, understanding, and a willingness to confront some uncomfortable truths. But it's a challenge we absolutely have to take on if we want to build a better world, a more just and compassionate world. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive. It's been a really profound and thought-provoking journey. We hope you'll keep thinking about these critical issues long after this episode is over.